Right, so welcome to this presentation of how to use Ogre 3D for game development. My name is Erik Ogenvik. I'm a developer with WorldForge. If you were here for Al's presentation, you know a bit more about WorldForge. And my main area in WorldForge is working on the Ember client, which is a 3D client. And here's a nice picture of how that looks inside the game. And as you saw, but I was mentioning that I'm doing this 3D client, but I don't know much math. So it's possible to do this without knowing math, just to reassure some of you. And the agenda for this talk is I'm going to start with talking about Ogre 3D, what it is. And then I'm going to talk about why you want to use it. And then focus on some core concepts of the engine, focus on how to get started, and then questions. And yes, there will be code. If anyone is have been missing that from the presentations, I know I always enjoy having code when I watch presentations. Anyway, overview of Ogre. Ogre is a general purpose 3D engine, and with general purpose, it means that it's not specifically tailored to any certain kind of use case. It's general. And I'll talk a little more about why that is important to realize later on. It's cross-platform. It's available for all kinds of Unix versions, Linux, FreeBSD, OS X, whatever. It's available for Windows. It's available for iOS devices, i.e. iPhone or iPads. It's available for Android. And there's also a work in progress where there's a version for the Google Native Client stack, which is this way of allowing your browser to run native code. And as we heard earlier today, there's also a Pandora port in the works. So it's something which is available for pretty much all of the major platforms. And it's also cross-graphics layer. So when you're working with graphics, you're talking to the hardware through a graphics layer, and the main large ones are OpenGL and DirectX, and Ogre works with both of these. It's also and it also works with OpenGL ES 1.1. They're working on a 2.0 implementation, and as I understand it, there are also implementations for consoles. So as it says next, it's MIT license, and it used to be LGPL licensed, but since consoles don't have linking, it's only one big binary. If you have something which is LGPL, you can't link it if you run on a console. So in order for Ogre to be runnable on consoles, they switched the license to MIT. And I heard about there being versions for consoles, but since everything is under NDA and so secret when you're working with consoles, nothing has been really verified. It's a very mature engine, and both mature engine and mature project. It's been around for, I don't remember, I think 12 years, something like that, 10 or 12 years, and it's extremely mature. It's a huge community, wonderful forum, and there's been books written about it, and it's very, very mature. But it runs on quite low-end hardware. It runs on OpenGL 1.2.1 hardware and upwards. And I think it's something akin to a TNT2 card or something. At least if you have a GeForce 4 and upwards, you will get pretty good performance from it. And it's, and of course the main site is ogre3d.org, where you'll find everything. So it's written in C++. So the main core of Ogre and all of the samples and everything is written in C++. But there are a lot of bindings. And those that stick out are the Python bindings, something called PyOgre or Python Ogre. And there are games written entirely in Python using these bindings. There's a Java binding project called Ogre 4J, which uses GNI for Java bindings. There's a .NET implementation, which is a re-implementation of Ogre in .NET. So it's not using native callbacks for binaries. It's a total re-implementation. I don't know how they've done it, but apparently it works. So if you're on Mono or if you're working with .NET, you can use Mogre. And there's also Lua bindings, through a project of Luger, which provides Lua bindings. I never used the Lua bindings myself, but they exist and they work apparently. But and then there are a couple of smaller bindings, but nothing that sticks out as much as these larger projects. But when talking about Ogre as a graphics engine, it's important to realize what it's not, because it is not a game engine. It is a rendering engine. It renders stuff. In order for you to have a game engine, you will need much more. You will need to have, for example, physics. You will need to have a UI, sound, game rules, and a server and a protocol and everything. So a very common question when newcomers come to the Ogre forum is, how can I use this to write my an MMO, for example? I want to write World of Warcraft, but you can do anything you want. And they have to forever tell them that, no, this is a 3D engine only. So it's used to render 3D. And it's important to remember this, that it's, and it's also one of the things that I personally find makes it so attractive, because they focus on the 3D rendering. They don't devote time to other stuff, which is only tangential to the 3D rendering. And it's something that's actually used in a lot of games. So these are some screenshots from commercial games, because they have the best assets. And it's also Worldforge. So these are some of the games. So Torchlight is one quite well-known game using Ogre. Venetica also, The Blob, Pacific Storm. So it has been used in a lot of games, and it is a skill that if you have it and you're interested in doing game development, it is worthwhile having it. And many more. So these are mainly the commercial games, because they are well known. But there are tons of open source games also. And Worldforge, of course. I have to plug that, Worldforge. So I mentioned it's a general engine. And so when you're doing 3D, if you have a very specific use case, you can always skimp up on some of the details. So, for example, if you're making a game where you know that you would always be looking at it from the top, and you will never see more than 10 tiles at one time, you can probably tailor your 3D engine to that specific use case and get a very good performance out of it. But Ogre is a general purpose engine. It's meant to be used by whatever 3D world you're planning to implement, whatever the scale, whatever kind of assets you have, and how you can move throughout the 3D world. So it's general, and it's scene graph based. Everything is in a scene graph. We'll come back to the scene graph later on. It has a plugin architecture which goes through it all. So pretty much everything is plugins. So for example, the render system. There are two main render systems, the OpenGL and the DirectX render system. And those are plugins. You can load them at dynamically. And there are plugins for particles, plugins for different kind of terrains or terrains effects or whatever. Everything is very much plugin. And it has a very clean architecture. It's very much, very object-oriented architecture. And it's also scalable with hardware. So, depending on the hardware you have, you will get more and less features. So, these 3D layers, OpenGL and DirectX, they have functions for querying the hardware, whether they have some kind of feature. So, depending on the features available, you will get more and more or less fidelity in the graphics. a newer card might have access to larger textures, for example, whereas an older card won't allow textures of a certain size. And Ogre handles this, all of this for you. It scales with the hardware. It's doing mainly forward rendering, and this is a technical detail, so I won't go into it, but those, it might be interesting to know that you can render either forward or deferred rendering is the other kind of rendering. And deferred rendering is something that is coming more and more. If you play any high profile game like Crysis or Unreal, they use deferred rendering. It's a rendering technique which allows you to have many light sources, but you have to render it in a different way. Ogre allows this to be done, but you have to tweak it a bit, and it's not the natural way of doing it. So it's mainly a forward rendering engine. So I won't go into much more about it, but I just want to mention it that it's doable, but it's mainly forward. And it's probably, Ogre is probably what you need if you want to do it. And one of the reasons for talking about Ogre is that nowadays, pretty much each and every computer you buy will have a 3D card, and a pretty good 3D card. So if you buy a new Intel chip, the Core i7, it will have a 3D card embedded in the CPU, which is actually pretty good. It is a good card. So if you're doing game development, you might want to look into running 3D, because there are lots of computers which are able to run your 3D games, compared to, like, say, 6 years ago, where that wasn't the case. And the reason why you want to use Ogre is there are a couple of things, or there are a lot of things, which are hard to do when working with 3D. So I just should stop by mentioning that whenever you do 3D, often what you want to do is you want to fake reality with the lowest amount of resources you can use while still fooling the user. So in a perfect world, if you would make a 3D game, you would like to model each and every atom and photon and electron to give a perfect fidelity, but you can't, so you fake it. So you use polygons to fake materia or matter, and you want to fake as much as possible, because the more you fake, the less the graphic card has to work. But you only want to fake as far as it's noticeable to the user that this isn't the real world. So this is the main problem with 3D, that you want to have a balance of these two things, and that is the overarching theme. But amongst the smaller things to handle are these. So you have resource handling, which is tricky. So say you have a world, and you have you want there to be grass. So when we use to walk through the world, there will be grass. But it's a large world, and it would be impossible for you to display all grass at once, or store it at once. You might want to generate it procedurally. Then you have resource handling, because you have resources which you don't want to be available all the time, but sometimes. Or if you have a world with tons of textures, so if you walk into a building, you will see paintings and high fidelity textures, but you won't see them if you're in another building, but they're still in the world, so you don't want to have them loaded when you're not in the building. That's also resource handling. You have to know when should a certain resource be available, and should it be on the graphics card or not. So this is a bit tricky. Level of detail is also tricky. Level of detail you want to use different models depending on how close you are to things. So if you're rendering a forest, so if you played any game like Skyrim or Oblivion or whatever, a game with a lot of trees, you notice that if a tree is far away, it's actually just a flat surface, and when you get closer, it like fades into being more detailed. And this is level of detail. And the same with my example with the grass. you only want to see the grass when you're close to it. You don't want to see it when you're far away. Because the graphics card can only handle a certain amount of both pixels and vertices at once. And if you were to send all of the grass in the world to the graphics card at once, it would just choke. So level detail is also important. Culling, that refers to the where you only render what you see. So if you're looking at, if I'm looking at you, I'm just rendering you, I'm not rendering what's behind me. And this can be a bit tricky to figure out, depending on how your geometry is managed. If it's a simple room, it might be easy. But if it's just something where you have a window, you can watch something outside, or if you're on a ship or whatever, it becomes quite tricky after a while. Just bring some. And then you have hardware idiosyncrasies, which is different hardware have different capabilities. And sometimes, especially when working with open source and open source drivers, the drivers lie to the OpenGL layer. So some hardware might be faulty. They might lack a certain feature, but the driver might say to the OpenGL layer, "Oh, but we have this feature." And some hardware might have some path might be slow. So it might be some deficiency in the hardware, which makes that if you have a certain kind of texture, it's much more slow than another kind of texture. And given the huge amount of different hardware available, it's impossible for anyone to keep track of all of these things. But if you use Ogre, you have this. There are some piece of code which will recognize that, oh, this driver and this card, they don't work so good for this feature, and turn it off. And then you have shader management. And shaders, I should just mention what shaders. So shaders are pieces of code running on the GPU, the graphic processor. So this is how we do most advanced graphic effects. And just like with standard hardware, doing shaders that work on all kinds of different hardware is hard. And having shaders then interact with your material and your world in a good way is also hard. It is not easy to manage this in a good way. And in addition, if you want to be cross-platform, you probably want to provide one shader for OpenGL using the GLSL language, and one shader for DirectX using the HLSL language. But you probably want then your engine to use these two shaders as if they behaved the same. It's also hard to do. It gets messy and tricky. And then they have something called pipeline optimization, and that ties into the hardware idiosyncrasies thing. When you send stuff to the graphics card, there are thousands of ways of doing it, and if you're not careful, it can be very, very inefficient. So, for example, say you're rendering a forest and you have a model of a tree. So you can either have 100 trees. You can either make 100 separate rendering calls to the GPU, saying that render this mesh over there with this material, and then you do the same thing again for the next, and it gets very inefficient. Whereas using more, if you optimize for this and you recognize that, oh, in this frame I will be using 100 instances of the exact same mesh, I can tell the graphics card to, okay, use this mesh and just multiply it 100 times. So this is pipeline optimization. And that's also something which Ogre handles for you. It batches, it puts rendering updates into batches and sends them to the GPU. These are just some of the things. I wrote an incomplete list. There are tons of things that are hard to do in 3D. And this is probably why you want to use Ogre 3D. And this also, I would say that this also applies, even if you have a very specific scene where you think, oh, I don't need a general purpose 3D engine because I have a specific scene. Well, you might want to look into Ogre anyway because of these things. You will run into problem with resource handling. You will run into problem with level detail. You will run into the problem with shader management. So it might be worth saying, okay, I might not get as much performance out of it as if I used something I wrote myself. But given the amount of resources needed for that, it might be worth it. So Ogre uses a scene graph. So a scene graph, it's a common technique of handling 3D stuff. And it's a pretty good simulation of the real world. But it's a simulation, as with everything. So it's not exact, but it's a pretty good simulation. It's a general solution. There are other ways of handling your scene and using a scene graph, but it's a general solution for a general purpose engine. So what you have a node hierarchy with one root node, and then everything is just children from that. And children are altered with parents. So when you move a parent node, the child nodes also move. And then you can have things attached to these nodes. So as I say, it's a time for a car analogy. So if you have a car, you might want to have four wheels on it, and you want the wheels to have suspension, so they move a bit up and down when the car moves over the surface. So then you would have the car would be one node, and each tire would be a sub node of the car. So when you move a car, the nodes move along with it, but they can also move a bit up and down. So that's the basic of a scene graph, and this is the base way of handling objects in the world in Ogre. And I said that things can be attached to nodes, and things, well, there are a couple of different things. One of the most important things is a camera. So you have to have something recording from the world and then putting it on. So you would have a camera object which you attach to nodes. You would also want to have lights, perhaps. It's not necessary because you can't just say, oh, I want to have ambient light, like just general light. But you probably want to have some lights attached, torches or whatever. And then you also want to have an entity attached to these nodes. And an entity, that's a mesh. And I'll show you a little more about entities. But if you have... Can we close?
I'm sorry. The ogre.
Yes.
Okay, this is the ogre. You already started. Okay.
Yes. Okay,
this is the ogre.
Isn't it full though? Yeah.
It's full.
Anyway, so entities are one of the main things to handle in Ogre because they represent like basic geometry. But then you can have particles, which are particles effects if you have, for example, snow or sparkles or whatever, or if you have if you play a game and see a magical effect, it's usually done by particles. It's a way of applying flat polygons to render particles. And then you can have any random geometry. It can also be attached to a node. So you can have a piece of terrain, for example, or some more advanced geometry. So, and core to the Ogre engine is this entity concept. So, an entity is an instance of a mesh. So a mesh is geometry plus materials, plus also perhaps animations. So this is a good example of a deer. Which is made out of the geometry of a deer, and then when we apply some textures and materials, we get it looks like a deer. So one mesh can then be used in many instances, and each of those instances is an entity. So if I want to have a couple of deers, I would place entities referencing the deer mesh. And when creating meshes, you will use a random 3D authoring tool, for example Blender 3D, which is good, and free. So materials, on the other hand, it's a material is applied to surface, and it's often it's a texture, but it's not. That's not all. It has textures. It has lightning, and it can also have shaders, and it can have different textures and everything. You can make pretty advanced materials. We can do a lot of stuff, but just to get a feel, it's basically a texture which determines the look of a surface. Shaders. But I already spoke about shaders, so I won't do that. So I forgot to mention when I spoke about shaders that there are three major shader languages. GLSL for OpenGL, HLSL for DirectX, and then there's a language called CG, which is a language created by NVIDIA, and it pretty much shares the same syntax as HLSL, but you have to have a runtime in order to run it, because it compiles into GSSL or HLSL, but the runtime is not free or open source software. So if you're doing if you're doing something using a free and open source license, you can't use CG because you can't dispute the runtime. Then it's better to write different shaders for DirectX or OpenGL. and when creating materials, it's good to either decide the target hardware, because the amount of shaders being applied, the size of the texture, everything is dependent on the capabilities of the target hardware. So you can either say that, we're going to target pretty low hardware, which is perfectly fine. For example, the game I showed earlier, Torchlight, it targets very, very, very simple hardware, DirectX 7 hardware. They don't use any shaders at all, but they have excellent art direction, just like World of Warcraft. So they can get away with it because they have excellent art direction. But when you write your materials, you can either target low hardware, or you can use material fallbacks. So you have, so Ogre has the system, depending on the capabilities of the hardware available, you can provide different materials. So we do that in Ember. If you have a good rig, you will get dynamic shadows and all kinds of effects. Whereas if you don't have it, you will get flat. You won't get any shadows, but it will run nonetheless, and this is changeable on the fly. Yes. So one of the core concepts of Ogre is the scene manager. And the scene manager is an instance of the class scene manager, which manages a scene. And a scene has a single root node, which everything is attached to. And that's how you interact with the world. And there are different kinds of scene managers available, because dependent on different kinds of layouts. So for example, if you have a world which you know is going to be flat, everything is going to be flat and spread out in horizontal direction, but there won't be any difference in vertical directions, you can probably use a scene manager which optimizes for this. Whereas if you use if you want to have a world where you walk around in a mine, for example, and you won't see much of a you only see small rooms at once, you might want to choose a scene manager which is optimized for that instead. So there are different kinds of scene managers optimized for different kinds of geometry. In most cases, you can just use the default scene manager or the octree scene manager. But you can change this afterwards. You can start with the default scene manager, and then after a while, you think, but our scene is always displayed in this certain way. Perhaps we want to use the dungeon scene manager, which is optimized for dungeons, for example. So you can change this afterwards. But so the scene manager is the core object. And here's code. This is C++. And I mainly want to show this because, one, I know people like code, and two, I want to show how easy it is to just get up and running with Ogre. So, can everyone see? Yeah, all right, yeah. So we start by creating a root object. So that root object is contains the whole Ogre. So we create a root object, and then we call the method show config dialog. Then you get a dialog where we can select like screen resolution, everything. Yeah, so you click that, and then you get a window. And then we create a scene manager. Create scene manager, and we want a generic scene manager, so we'll ask it for a generic scene manager. And we get our scene manager. And then we ask the scene manager to create camera. Oh, so we get the camera. And then, so now we have a scene manager and we have a camera, but we have to have a camera inside the world. So we ask the manager for the root scene node, and then we tell it to create a child scene node. So now we have a node inside of the world, and we built in node. And then we move the node a bit further away, one unit away. And then we tell it to auto-track the root C node. So it swivels around and points at the root C node. And then we attach our camera to this node. And then what we do is we create an entity of the type deer. So we have a deer entity. And then we attach the deer entity to the root C node. And we start rendering, and suddenly we have a situation where we have a camera looking at a deer inside the world, and it's been rendered, and that's all you have to do to get started with just rendering and having up. Any questions on?
Yeah, for what do you need scene mode? Is it like
what
your child scene mode? Yeah.
Could you speak up? I can't hear you.
Your child scene node, what is it used for in your example?
My child scene node, what is it used for? Well, I attach the camera to the child scene node.
Would it be more logical to have a child scene node for
here? Yes, this is just an example, so yeah, it might be. Yeah, so you can do this anyway. You could also attach the camera to the root scene node and then have another scene node which the deer is attached to. It doesn't matter really. So this is just an example to show you how easy it is to get started. So
a camera and a deer is exactly the same type of object.
Oh yeah. So both camera and deer inherit from the movable object class. So I spoke about things. These are things that can be attached to scene nodes. So you use the scene nodes to arrange your world, and then you attach stuff to the scene nodes. And it's only when you do that they appear in the world. So you can create entities and just keep them ready to be used whenever you want, for example.
So I can create a camera that is always in a certain relationship to the deer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
You switch to a in-deer perspective for us.
Exactly, yeah. So yeah, so if you had a deer mesh and you had the camera on the same scene node, when you move the deer, the camera would also move. Yeah, or you can do a third person camera just by having it. Yeah. So, and then the other thing you might want to if you start working with Ogre, the other thing you need to fill a bit with is lightning, and so you have this thing called the ambient light, which is just light which is there. It is a bit like sunlight, but it's not directional. It's all entities are lit the same way with ambient light. So you can set the ambient light pretty easy. But you can also create a light type, a light thing, which can be attached to scene nodes through the create light method. Then you have a light, and then you can set the diffuse color, which is the color. So simple. And then you can attach it. And you can have different kinds of lights. You can have spot lights, you can have just round lights or directional lights or whatever. So as you saw here in my example, I just called root start rendering. And what happens then is the program enters Ogre's own rendering loop. So it just renders, and then then there are callbacks, and if one of those callbacks return false, it will exit the render loop. So that's a pretty simple way of doing it. But if you're making your own game, you probably want to have your own render loop, because you want to have your own event loop, because you don't want to tie your game to Ogre. I'm going to talk a bit more about that you don't want to tie your game to Ogre, because it's just a 3D engine. So you would probably want to have your own render loop, and then you just call Ogre root render one frame each frame, and your event loop could probably, there's no reason for you to render more than 60 frames per second, because most people and most monitors can't handle that anyway. So you probably want to have a render loop or a game event loop which only renders enough so it's 60 frames per second, and then the other time you can either just idle or you can do network or sound stuff or whatever. And then, but if you want to listen to these render events, you can implement the frame listener interface. So then you can get information about now we're going to render and now we've rendered everything. Input is something that isn't handled by Ogre. By input, I mean mouse and keyboard and timing inputs. Those aren't handled by Ogre. And there are mainly two different systems you can use for that. You can either use the OIS, which is the object-oriented input system, which is kind of embraced by Ogre. And it's a pretty simple input system. Or you can use the SDL library. And the OIS system would actually use the SDL library if you're running on Linux. But the OIS, it only handles input, whereas the SDL library does more stuff. It does pixmap stuff and whatever. But there are good examples of these things on the, or especially good examples of the object-oriented input system in the Ogre samples. And then threading. So threading is something that is more and more important. And doing threading in C++ is just sucks. There's no way of doing it in a good way. But you have to do it anyway sometimes. So so with Ogre 3D, it works the same as most UI toolkits. For example, if you're using Swing or whatever, you can't touch the rendering code from any other thread than the main thread. So anything which goes and then talks to DirectX or OpenGL has to be done on the main thread. And newer versions of DirectX, for example, they do allow for different threads to access the rendering layer, but Ogre isn't really suited for it. But Ogre can allow for use of different threads, and what it does then, it does resource loading on different threads. So for example, resource loading is finding a file in the file system, loading it, and then parsing the data. It might be like, for example, a texture or a mesh or a script or something. That can be done in a separate thread. But all of the interaction with the rendering system has to be done at the main thread. And if you don't do that, it will probably work, but you will get race conditions and it will crash randomly. So don't do it. And then I will talk a bit about application design. So as I mentioned, you shouldn't make your game dependent on Ogre, and especially not if you're working on an open source soft or free software game. Because if you're just doing a prototype for a company and you have a fixed time span and you have you know what you want to do, it might be okay to just whip something up and then have everything intertwined. But I found that when you're working on open source and free software game, these projects take time. They span 5 or 10 years, and the focus and the goals change during the project. So you want to have a design which is component based. We talked about, if you've been around, we talked about having data driven and component based design, and this also applies to the way you use different libraries. It's very easy. Given the way I showed you, you can just call it stop running. It's very easy to make an Ogre game application which is tied tightly to Ogre, but that would be a mistake. You don't want to do that. You want to separate. So game core is different from visualization. So for example, that means you want to separate, you want to have a separate rendering or a event loop, for example, but you also want to have, you don't want the 3D representation to also be the real representations of the entities. You want to perhaps have a simplified collision detection representation because it's faster to use than the mesh being rendered. And also, server is not client. You don't want to use any kind of Ogre stuff on the server. So if this only applies if you have a server client application, of course. But if you have a server client application, you don't want to use Ogre stuff on the server. Many people have tried, so the Ogre forums are full of people and they're asking, oh, I built this server and we're getting a problem when we're loading the Ogre meshes. And no, don't have Ogre stuff on the server. Those are different things. Another thing is that just because you have good features in your 3D engine doesn't mean you'll automatically get good visuals. Because in order to get good visuals, you have to have talented artists, you have to have good assets, and you also probably want to have some kind of clear art direction. These are things that especially open source games and free software games are really lousy at, with the exception of Wesnoff, I would say. So if you look at some of the games that are popular, for example, World of Warcraft, they don't have many features in their 3D engine, but they have excellent art direction, and as a result, they can get excellent visuals. Of course, it doesn't hurt to have good features, but it doesn't come automatically that good features equals good visuals. Whereas great assets often equals good features, I want to also plug wombat.worldfort.org. We have a quite huge library of assets. It's over 5 gigabytes. I think it's 6 gigabytes now of free assets. They are all GPL licensed assets. So we have this nice visual tool for accessing these assets. So if you're starting out with 3D and you need assets. And you, especially if you need some kind of medieval assets, which is our focus, it wouldn't hurt to go and look at our assets because they're free and they're available and they're pretty high quality, I would say. So, I'll try to speed it up. So when it comes to 3D and free software, there are some issues. And the main issue is that historically, OpenGL drivers suck. They have been slow and buggy, and they've been lying about the features they support. And when I say suck, I mean as in they either freeze X totally, or they crash X totally, or you will just get strange errors. That's less of a problem now because AMD is doing some good work with the driver. Intel is also doing some good work with their open source driver. NVIDIA's proprietary driver has traditionally been excellent. So if you want to get good performance out of your video card, you unfortunately currently, at least in my experience, you will have to use the NVIDIA proprietary driver. There are the Nouveau driver is working on improving that, but that is a problem. And as I mentioned, that nowadays integrated GPUs, those GPUs that sit on either the main board or integrated with the CPU, are becoming more and more prevalent and taking over the discrete GPUs. A discrete GPU is something which you buy as a separate card. And what that means is that more and more Intel GPUs are entering the market. And Intel they have an open source product for providing drivers. So it's not all doom and gloom. It is getting better. But it is, especially if you have people with older hardware, be prepared to get all kinds of strange questions about crashes and artifacts, which all boils down to they either having an old hardware or an outdated driver or something. So, I mean, if you want to learn more about Ogre, of course, the excellent site, and it has a forum, has a wiki, the sources, they have samples also. So if you want to see how to do stuff, wouldn't hurt to look at the samples. There are books written about it. You can learn more there. Oh yeah, so we'll have some minutes for questions. Yes?
Yes, can't you dynamically generate content and put it in the engine, like generate a mesh in real time? And
yes. So the question is if you can dynamically generate content and put it in the engine. Yes, you can. So as I mentioned here, that things that can be attached is also random geometry. You can create random geometry on the fly and just say that this is lines and triangles and everything and send it to the, yeah, so that's doable.